produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, ruling expected shortly in legal challenge to U.S. government's pot monopoly. A DEA administrative law judge is expected to rule imminently on whether the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse, or NIDA, can maintain exclusive control of the production and distribution of cannabis for clinical research. At issue in the case is whether the DEA in 2004 improperly rejected an application from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst to manufacture cannabis for FDA-approved research. The DEA waited more than 3 years before officially denying the university's request, stating that the establishment of such a facility, quote, would not be consistent with the public interest, close quote. Respondents in the case, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, and Lyle Craker, director of UMass Amherst Medicinal Plant Program, are challenging the DEA's denial. Argued in administrative hearings last year that the private production facility is in the public interest, as defined by the U.S. Controlled Substances Act, because it would encourage competition in the marketplace and promote technological and scientific advancement in the field of medicine. Quote, "This lawsuit really is our last hope for trying to take marijuana, whether it's smoked or vaporized, through the FDA regulatory system," close quote, said MAPS Executive Director and Normal Board Member Rick Doblin. Currently, all federally approved research on marijuana must utilize cannabis supplied by and grown under contract with the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse, or NIDA. The UMass Amherst proposal sought to provide clinical investigators with an alternative, independent source of cannabis for FDA-approved clinical trials. In recent years, several U.S. researchers have complained that the low quality of NIDA-grown marijuana is insufficient to use in clinical studies evaluating cannabis's therapeutic potential. Others have criticized NIDA's willingness to provide cannabis for clinical protocols, seeking to investigate the drug's medical uses. In 2004, the agency's director, Nora Volko, stated that it is, quote, "not NIDA's mission to study the medical uses of marijuana," close quote. Under federal law, even if the DEA's administrative judge rules against NIDA's marijuana monopoly, DEA head Karen Tandy can still elect to set aside the ruling. More information on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal and promote marijuana law reform across the country. Just visit NORML.org. Wednesdays here on the Stash, we focus on health and wellness, and we'll begin our show today with an exploration of stress, something we all need a lot less of in our lives. Welcome to the Garden of Wellness, an Audio Stash segment exploring cannabis smokers' continued good health. Today, we're exploring the topic of stress. The modern American lifestyle offers ample opportunity to create stress, and our stress levels have a direct effect on our general health and well-being. Many regular marijuana smokers point to stress relief as one of the beneficial factors of pot in their experience. And scientific data does seem to indicate that smoked marijuana has an antidepressant factor. But depression is just one sign of overall stress, and this aspect of human health certainly does not have one cure-all, even cannabis. And while it's probably impossible to completely eliminate stress in anyone's life, there are ways to manage stress effectively. Let's look at this part of our physiology. Stress is a completely natural phenomenon, and generally speaking, it's the body's instinct to defend itself. We use stress when we need to jump out of the way of a speeding car. It's our danger avoidance system. Problems arise when we use this emergency instinct in relation to everyday activities or life's challenges and changes. Stress about these daily things, especially over time, has direct physical impact, and are characterized by feeling uptight, anxious, afraid, or worried. Any sort of change in our life or routine can be stressful, even if it's a good change. It's not the event itself, but how we react that matters. Each person is different and will react individually to situations. For example, retirement or relocation may be stressful for one person and not for another. Now, everybody is probably all too familiar with the signs of stress: insomnia, stiff neck, achy body, depression, fatigue, problems dealing with others. Over the long term, these can lead to serious, life-threatening issues. Now, the first trick to stress management is being able to step back and recognize these signs as they're happening. It requires us to make time for our own health and well-being every day. Now, many of us may think we're already doing that. You know, exercise is a wonderful stress reducer in many cases. But in our competitive fitness culture, for some people, even exercise is stressful. So, no matter what your daily activity regimen is, even if you block out 2 hours a day at the gym, spend a few moments each day to gauge your stress levels. If you are stressed, look at some different factors. Simply eating well and drinking enough water can keep our stress down, but often the causes of stress are far beyond our diet. When dealing with environmental or situational stress, here's some tips I've put together from the American Heart Association, the BBC, and other professionally distributed information on the subject. First of all, don't worry about things you can't control, like the weather. This is far, far easier said than done, of course, but it truly is the best advice. Next, try and look at change as a positive challenge, not a threat. Remember that life is truly a challenge and was never meant to be boring. Next, if you're feeling overwhelmed at work or at home, ask for help from friends, family, or professionals. Trying to go it all alone will only add to stress. And that leads into our next tip: set realistic goals for yourself at home and at work. Accomplishing goals is a positive experience for everybody, so make sure you don't put your success out of reach. And finally, to aid all of these other suggestions and to relieve stress in its own right, try to practice some form of daily meditation. Far from the trances of the Buddhist monks, meditation is simply guided thought and can be initiated by deep breathing or relaxation. Really, folks, this does not require a special outfit, CD of chanting, or bamboo mats. It's simply taking the time at home or in the office or even in a quiet car for some self-silence. Breathing is important. It may seem cheesy or you may feel self-conscious the first time, but the breathing associated with meditation is a signal to the body and the brain to relax. have a moment, do a little stress management right now as you listen to the show today. Lie down on a flat surface. Place your hand on your stomach just above your navel. Place your other hand right on your chest. Now breathe in slowly. Try to make your stomach rise a little. Hold that breath for just a second. Now breathe out slowly and let your stomach go back down. In acting school, these simple routines of stress management were a part of the beginning of almost every class, especially our stage combat courses. There's nothing more important than leaving your stress at the door when you're about to pick up a rapier or broadsword. These simple tools of stretching muscles and relaxed breathing were essential to the calm concentration required of precise swordsmanship. But in time, those tools have become essential to my own well-being. So, I encourage everyone to take some time each day to gauge and tackle your stress. All of us can experience a greater level of joy in our lives and a greater pleasure in marijuana smoking. Get some serenity now and increase your joy. Just take a few moments each day to tackle your stress. Next up today, some stash music from the Hempilation 2 album. This one is really my personal favorite off both Hempilation albums. Here's Dar Williams with Play the Greed.
I finally learned that the market's righteous holler comes from a pale face on a paper dollar. And I bet you got a few bucks in your hip wallet, so throw a tiny wrench in the fiber optic wires. Morals are cheap and you can be the buyers. We can let them poison and pillage foreign lands, or we can play the greed right into our hands. Oh, 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 oh. Everybody says it can't happen. Everybody says it can't happen here. Things will turn around just as sure as they said it. Hell, things change and they all take credit. So ask why there's only 40 songs on a station. Ask your cafe about their coffee's plantation. Why is it Arizona hasn't gone solar? And tell your print shop that hemp grows faster. And it doesn't mean a backroom clear-cut disaster. The market doesn't care, but it wants to understand. And you can play the greed right into your hands. Oh, the smiling man says it can't happen here. Channel 4 says it can't happen here. Things will turn around just as sure as they said it. Your pennies and do your battle. Chairman will start quoting Chief Seattle and put little tree frogs on their letterhead. Cause the market resists and the market absorbs with a five-pointed leaf on the cover of Forbes. Yeah, very strange people turn valleys to dams. Yeah, these are the ones that drain prairies to sand. And they just assume you didn't know this land is your land. But we can play the world our hands. Oh, Malcolm's gonna say it can't happen here. Rupert's gonna say it can't happen here. Things will turn around
That was Dar Williams off the Hempelation 2 album here today on the Audio Stash. We'll have some pod safe comedy for you later in the show. Next up, it's time for our weekly interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine of Normal's Advisory Board. You know, we're really lucky to have someone with such working knowledge of the science behind marijuana to answer such a broad variety of questions every week. Here's Dr. Earlywine in our Cannabis in Action segment. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to it right up at normalaudiostash.com. Dr. Earlywine is also on Normal's advisory board and joins us every Wednesday here on the Audio Stash. Mitch, welcome back to the program today.
Great to be back.
Well, first I want to ask you today, you know, we did a segment on stress earlier today. So let me ask you, many marijuana smokers say that cannabis reduces their stress. Is that a real effect happening in the body? I mean, does smoking pot actually help with the symptoms of stress?
I do see decreases in people's reported stress when they smoke marijuana in the lab. A lot of folks who say that it decreases stress in their lives, I'd like to have them look at what they're doing while they do it, though. So a lot of folks say, oh, I smoke marijuana, and then I go watch TV, I go play with my kids, I go hang out. And it's almost a way to say, okay, now I'm not doing any more work. And in fact, if they would just not do any more work, their stress might decrease if they gave themselves that time, whether the marijuana was present or not.
So smoking marijuana, for regular pot smokers, this could be perhaps the same trigger that deep breathing and meditation is for others.
Exactly. It's a sort of a marker in your day to say, okay, from here on out, I'm done with the exercise and work part, and I'm into the enjoyment part. And I feel like marijuana certainly enhances that, but it's not the only way to get to that kind of reduction in stress.
Now, how about the opposite? Is someone who is, you know, super stressed out and looking for relief by smoking marijuana, you know, could some people make their stress worse?
As it turns out, there's a subset of folks who have a real stressful reaction to marijuana. Their hearts beat very quickly. They feel particularly self-conscious and uncomfortable and things like that. And obviously, they wouldn't want to turn to that. Also, as we've been hearing about with almost any kind of medication or drug, the set and the setting really determine the experience. So if you're in an environment where it's really not a fun place, marijuana is not going to actually make it more fun. It's probably going to make it even more aversive.
Also today, Mitch, let's talk about something a lot of responsible marijuana smokers likely do, and that's combine alcohol with cannabis. And we've discussed the effects of these separately, but, you know, what happens in the body when we mix these drugs together inside?
The literature on combinations of drugs is relatively small, but the one thing we do know is that alcohol seems to slow down the THC metabolism. The active ingredients in marijuana end up getting broken down more slowly if there's alcohol in the system. This can lead to a couple of effects that people might not expect. For one, data of my own suggests that people who drink a lot, more than, say, 14 drinks per week, end up being more likely to have marijuana-dependent symptoms if they smoke a lot of marijuana, whereas people who don't drink could smoke the same amount and not end up with those dependent symptoms. The other thing is the actual subjective experience. So it seems like the cannabis high ends up lasting a lot longer if there's alcohol in the system. That seems like perhaps, oh, this would be a wonderful way to keep your marijuana bill down or something like that, but in fact it's not something we know enough about to really rely on. So I caution folks to, you know, keep the alcohol consumption down, particularly if they're using cannabis simultaneously.
You know, anecdotally, I know that marijuana can cause, you know, dry mouth, and alcohol definitely has this dehydrating effect. But there are some rumors out there that combination of pot and alcohol can be dangerously dehydrating.
That does seem to be the case. Metabolizing alcohol and metabolizing cannabis requires a lot of water, and obviously, if you're going to do them both at the same time, you need more water handy. I do feel like the cotton mouth associated with marijuana use does increase with alcohol consumption in a lot of clinical reports, but there aren't any lab data to suggest that.
Now let's look at this from the other standpoint. Someone who only drinks alcohol. You mentioned a moment ago that alcohol can enhance the intoxicating effect of marijuana, but does pot enhance the alcohol effects as well? I mean, do you get more drunk?
It's funny how it's hard to sort of parse out in your mind which intoxication is coming from which drug when you're using both at the same time. And obviously this would vary with different kinds of strains of cannabis, and even different forms of alcohol have different subjective effects. But the bottom line would be let's not combine these drugs until we've got a whole lot of experience with them individually. I think people who've never used cannabis or who use it relatively infrequently would probably prefer to not use it in combination with alcohol or any other medication, including things like Benadryl and cough syrup and anything they might take medicinally and kind of forget about.
Mitch, all of the data out there suggests that the biggest risk marijuana smokers pose to themselves is not with any of the side effects of pot itself, but increased accident risk due to intoxication. And this means car accidents, but it also means falling off a ladder in the yard. And we all know about the current terrible DUI problems with alcohol. But is there any data that using both at the same time is specifically raising one's risk for accident and injury?
As it turns out, that's a new question, and one of my graduate students has just gathered some data to try to address this. Folks who use drugs simultaneously tend to be more sensation-seeking individuals anyway. So these are kind of risk-taking people dispositionally. They have that kind of risk-taking personality anyway. So it's not clear, is it the combination of the drugs that leads to these high risk-taking things, or is it that they're just risk-takers in the first place? And obviously we need to administer, you know, alcohol and cannabis in the laboratory to find that out, but that's not exactly a top priority of a lot of funding agencies right now.
Mitch, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about stress that the setting for smoking cannabis is so important. You know, when we talk about all these scientific studies, it makes me really curious. You know, how is cannabis administered in a lab setting? I mean, do people react differently than, say, the relaxed atmosphere of a, you know, a Dutch coffee shop?
The most ideal lab administrations of cannabis try to make the lab pretty pleasant. They have music going. They have magazines around. There's colorful posters and things like that. Some of the early tests of hallucinogens, for example, were done in these very horrible clinical, you know, everyone running around in a lab coat and asking lots of questions, and they thought, gee, LSD makes you extremely paranoid. This is a horrible drug. Why do people use it? When, in fact, you look at folks who use hallucinogens recreationally, and it ends up in another context to be a very different experience. The case for cannabis is very much the same. Laboratory administration of cannabis is still relatively rare, and so we don't get a great feel for how does it compare to administrations in nice social settings. But, you know, a number of users report it's just much more pleasant in a group of friends listening to nice music and enjoying some delicious food rather than sitting in a lab with white coat people asking you questions.
Now, how about alcohol? When drinks are administered in the lab setting, do you get a different reaction from people, or is drinking alcohol such a common part of daily life that it doesn't matter?
In fact, some of the best alcohol labs in the country, my friend Alan Marlatt at University of Washington, my friend Kim Frommy down at Texas, they have labs that are bars. There's a bar there, there's a nice mirror, there's all the signs, there's music going, and so they really can make it as much like a bar experience as possible. Obviously, it can't be as comfortable as, you know, sitting at home in your comfy jeans and having a couple of beers, but at least those data tend to generalize pretty well to people's experiences outside the lab.
And finally today, Mitch, you know, for those out there who've only experienced alcohol and who've never smoked pot, you know, obviously they're going to want to experiment with marijuana without drinking first. But what is perhaps, you know, the best setting for someone to experience marijuana for the first time?
It's interesting because people ask me this a lot, and I have to always ask, well, why would you want to try it in the first place? And then that should sort of let you know how you want to do it. But ideally, if you're with a couple of friends who are already experienced with cannabis, who are certainly going to enjoy themselves and model for you how to use this appropriately rather than turn it into some kind of bong hit competition, then you're really going to have a great time. And ideally, you'd get to enjoy their company and any other experiences you guys might have together. It's when people who really don't feel ready, who feel pressured to use it or using it as a result of some kind of expectation that it's going to be magic and create all kinds of wonderful things that it really just couldn't do, those are the ones who are most disappointed and in the end, most unlikely to end up using cannabis again.
Well, Mitch, this has been another fascinating discussion today, and I thank you again very much for letting us ask these questions and sharing your knowledge.
I really enjoy these talks, Chris.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to it right up at normalaudiostash.com. Dr. Earlywine joins us every Wednesday here on The Stash. In Action with Dr. Mitch Earlywine every Wednesday here on the Audio Stash. Keep a lookout for an individual archive of our interviews with Mitch coming online next week at normalaudiostash.com. Now, one of the most important aspects of good health is good humor. And here's a laugh from Peeper Radio Theater and Podshow.com. We've got links to Peeper Radio Theater right up on our website, normalaudiostash.com.
Wonderful. Just wonderful. That's a big round of applause for Tesla and his coils of fear. Next up on the old bill, back from their tour of the South Pacific, the Infantelli Brothers.
Tonight!
Underneath the stage!
We are
going to
show you
a miraculous feat
of the like
you have never seen.
Huzzah!
But first, allow us to introduce ourselves.
I am Giuseppe!
And I am Ian!
And we are
the Infantelli Brothers!
Ha! Now, in my hand, I hold a balloon.
He inflates the balloon.
I inflate the balloon!
Then he puts it in his teeth.
I put it in my teeth.
Then he stands way over there on the other side of the stage.
I stand way over here on the other side of the stage.
Now, in my hand, I hold a revolver.
A revolver.
I take aim.
He takes aim.
And I shoot.
He shoots.
Oh, dear. I will kill my brother again. You want to take me alive?
That was Peeper Radio Theater supplying us with that hearty Wednesday laugh. We have links to those guys right up at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Paul Armentano and Dr. Mitch Earlywine for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.